This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Whether you're working out, driving, cooking, sitting back, or trying to fall asleep, thanks for tuning in. Well, back in July of 2012, when I first started doing this program, I interviewed a man by the name of Curtis Duncan. The program was titled The Conspiracy to Feminize Males and Masculinize Females. If you didn't listen to it, I highly recommend you do to complement the following interview you're about to hear. My guest is Carol Kwiatkowski, who is the executive director of TEDx. TEDx stands for the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. They're dedicated to compiling and disseminating scientific evidence on the health and environmental damage caused by low-level exposure to chemicals, primarily those that interfere with hormone or endocrine action, otherwise known as endocrine disruptors. Endocrine disruptors pose serious environmental and health consequences, and this is not something we should be taking lightly. Carol oversees the development and execution of all of TEDx's programs. She also developed TEDx's Critical Windows of Development website tool, which presents a timeline of how the human body develops in the womb, with animal research showing when low-dose exposure to endocrine-disrupting chemicals during development results in altered health outcomes. If you regularly listen to my program, you'll know that I talk about the subject of hormone disruption often. I do because the chemical alteration of humanity is one of the most threatening issues we're currently facing. It's happening, and it's happening right now. If you're new to this subject, Carol will provide an overview coming up. Carol, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So tell us about your background and how you became involved with TEDx, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange in Colorado.
Well, that's an interesting question, actually. I had left academia to raise my family, and I moved from Denver into the mountains of Colorado, and somewhat just coincidentally ended up living in this tiny little town of 3,000 people. And it happened to be where the founder of the field of endocrine disruption had set up a nonprofit organization just a couple years prior to when I arrived. So I didn't actually, my background was not in environmental health, but I had studied experimental or cognitive psychology, and it was a behavioral science of how people think and process information. So I had a PhD, I had a social science background, and I introduced myself to Dr. Theo Colborne, who worked here in this town, and we sort of hit it off, and I said I'd be happy to work with you if you need any help. And she hired me, and they were looking for an executive director for the organization. Dr. Colborne was already in her 80s, and so they hired me for that position after working here part-time for about a year. And then it was just last December that Dr. Colborne passed away at 87. And now I am leading the organization fully.
Well, it's important work you do. I was very glad to come across the organization. Interesting that you have a psychology background. So are you more Jung or more Freud?
I would say, I guess I'd go with Jung.
Yeah, me too. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, for those who don't know, perhaps you can just give us an overview of the endocrine system and what its function is.
Oh, absolutely. So the endocrine system is, it's the system in our bodies that allows our organs, our glands, and the various tissues of the body to communicate with each other. And it does this through hormones. So some well-known examples are estrogens, androgens like testosterone that people are familiar with, thyroid hormones, and insulin is a hormone. People may not know that. But there's upwards of 50 different known hormones, and the endocrine system is actually very complex. It is responsible for how we develop in the womb, how we grow and mature, including how we mature sexually as we age. It's responsible for our intelligence and behavior, everything from sleep and appetite to thirst, how we respond to stress. It really is involved in just about every function that our bodies perform for us.
Well, by now, most people, especially my listeners, they've heard of endocrine disruptors or hormone mimicking chemicals or the politically incorrect term gender benders. But for those who don't know, what are endocrine disruptors?
Well, endocrine disruptors are chemicals that are in our environment that affect our endocrine system. So basically, they affect our hormones.
Now, I know this would take a long time to list them all, but what are some of the major routes of exposure to these chemicals? How are we getting them?
Sure, I can sort of summarize it for you so it's not such a long list. I would categorize them into maybe three different routes. One is that we ingest them in our food and beverages. So they're in food additives, they leach from food packaging, the plastic packaging. We get them into our mouths through hand-to-mouth behavior, when people eat with their hands or just touch their mouths, things like that. We also breathe them in the air, so they off-gas from various household products. They're in fragrances, they're in house dust, things like vehicle exhaust and other air pollutants. And they get in through our skin, directly through our skin, in like personal care products that we might rub on our skin, but also through certain kinds of receipt paper. Cash register receipts are coated in a hormone, bisphenol A, the same
thermal
hormone.
Paper, right?
Yes, yeah. The thermal paper that you can write on with your fingernail is coated with a hormone, bisphenol A, which is the BPA. People have probably seen plastic products, BPA-free water bottles and things like that. And the trouble with the receipt paper is that it's not really bound to the paper backing, and so it migrates very readily. And they've done some interesting research to see how and how quickly it gets into the body from that.
I actually found one company that's doing BPA-free thermal paper. I ordered it for my other business. Well, it's interesting, too, because if you use recycled toilet paper and other recycled paper products, it's also been contaminated with BPA because they're recycling thermal paper with all this other paper. So I don't buy any recycled paper products. What about you?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, it's one of those points at which doing what's right for the environment might conflict with doing what's right for our health. So I do buy some recycled products, but not everything.
Well, everything we use and touch these days, it is synthetic, originating from petrochemicals. And really, the synthetic boom was born as a result of the war industry, especially during World War II. And I think you'll enjoy this coming from a psychology background. But it's when women were told that nylon stockings were actually better and more fashionable than silk. So really, there were some major ad campaigns and mass psychology behind convincing us that, hey, synthetics are better quality and better for the environment. What do you know about that?
Yeah, there's a famous advertisement that's one of those sort of wartime era pictures, and it says better living through chemistry. And then I think it's the movie The Graduate, and where he says plastics are our future, and plastics are a huge source of endocrine disruptors. So that is really where it all got kicked off. And you can it's taken all of these decades to look at the connection between the advancement of those chemicals as part and parcel of our everyday world and match that with the increasing rates of all the chronic diseases and disorders that they are now attributing in part to exposure to endocrine disruptors.
Yeah, we're told that, oh, in low doses, all these chemicals, they're safe. But if you put together the total daily toxic burden from every little product you use and touch, it adds up to quite a high dose, right?
Well, that's part of the story. But the other piece of it, why we're particularly concerned about the endocrine system, is because the endocrine system is designed to function at very, very low concentrations, in like parts per trillion. So parts per trillion has been compared to a drop of water, one drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So tiny, tiny doses actually govern all of those systems that I was talking about, all of those things that the endocrine system is responsible for.
Wow.
And that's why it's particularly susceptible to these chemical impacts at very low doses.
So are any synthetic materials being tested for endocrine disruption these days?
There are some companies doing that. It's a little bit tricky because there's so many different hormones. So you could say one compound is, not estrogenic, but perhaps it's androgenic or anti-androgenic, as many of the endocrine disruptors are. So it's pretty complex to be actually, I think it's a little bit dangerous to be selling things where you're reassuring the public that you're giving them a product that is not going to affect their endocrine system, because I think it's difficult to be sure of that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the effects in more detail, because these chemicals impact women, men, and children pretty differently. So let's start with the most important aspect, I think, pregnancy. What are the prenatal effects of endocrine disruption?
Yeah, prenatally is really what we know most about. The majority of the research that's been done on endocrine disruptors has been done in animals looking at prenatal exposure. So they expose the mother to the chemical, and then they test her offspring and see how they fare. And and that's where I think the lower doses have an even bigger or more important, more long-lasting impact, because, you know, we start out as just a couple of cells, and those cells start dividing, and then they start differentiating into the different organs and tissues in the body. And as those systems are being set up, if you're exposed to these chemicals in utero, which we all are, you know, then that the design of your body systems is set up a little bit off from the start. So you're predisposed in a way to have problems later in life. And so, you know, that's going to be, I think, the next big field of research, is looking at prenatal exposures to these chemicals and how they really carry out into these disorders later in life.
Yeah, I always think about, what if the mom's breastfeeding and she's unknowingly using all sorts of estrogen-mimicking chemicals? What is that doing to her child?
Well, yes, it's not good. I mean, they do say that breastfeeding is still better than formula, and that is the recommendation. But at the same time, a lot of these chemicals, the persistent ones, they actually build up in our fat. And that's where your breast milk is coming from. So it's a way for a woman to detox them from her body, because she feeds them to her baby in breast milk. So it is, I actually, just prior to moving here and working with Dr. Colborne, I had my first child, and in my late 30s. And I read her book called Our Stolen Future, which is a hugely popular book, been translated into 18 different languages. And one of the things that talks about is how we detox these chemicals into our babies. And I was literally breastfeeding as I was reading that book.
And it's such a catch-22, because there are certain hormones that you pass on to your child that your child needs for development. And then they're not getting them through the formulas.
Right. Yeah. The nutrition value of breast milk, I think, is still regarded as better than formula. Plus, formula is sometimes packaged in packaging that leaches into the milk, and so that there's endocrine disruptors in the formula. And it also can, if it's made with soy, then genistein in soy is an endocrine disruptor. So It talk about a catch-22. It's
yeah,
a difficult
and
one.
The GMOs. I actually found one company in Germany that makes truly organic, non-GMO baby formula. It's like the best one in the world, and apparently they're mimicking it super close to, you know, what the female passes on to the child.
So. Right, yeah.
So what is that critical window in development in the fetus?
Well, I don't think we've really honed in on it. I think it depends on the system a little bit. A lot of research has been done in male fetuses, baby boys, where they're developing. And I think it's around 7 to 8 weeks is one of the critical windows where they're the critical pieces of the differentiate the male are beginning to develop. And that's where the impacts can be particularly bad, to use a simple word. We actually have on our website, we have a project called the Critical Windows of Development that maps all the stages of development of all the different bodily systems, the reproductive system, the endocrine system, the neurological system. And you can see in the human baby what's developing during each week. And then we've mapped onto that the animal research that shows what happens when you expose an animal during that period of development, what happens in the offspring. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we do at the Endocrine Disruption Exchange.
No, that's important. Yeah, there have been studies that prove even in children's toys and other plastic goods that kids are chewing, they're drinking from, they're using in different ways, are disrupting the development, especially of little boys, feminizing them due to the estrogen-mimicking agents. So this is pretty serious.
It is. It is.
I also read a study conducted testing children for flame retardants, since PBDEs are in all kids' clothing these days, especially the synthetic clothes. And all the kids were tested who were tested high levels of flame retardants in their urine. So, wow.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, endocrine disruptors can be found in urine, in blood, in saliva, in tears. They've tested in just about every bodily fluid, and they're there.
So what happens when men are exposed to high estrogen levels, since I know that they're especially at risk?
Well, with the men, the part of the reason that they are particularly susceptible is because the male fetus needs hormones during that specific time period during prenatal development to differentiate them from females, to make them into males. So without just the right amount of certain hormone at just the right times, they won't develop the physical characteristics that make them male. And in the brain, it's actually estrogen that's the driver of male development, because testosterone is converted to estrogen in the brain, and that's what leads to masculinization. So it's complicated, but it's really about maintaining that delicate balance of both estrogens and androgens and other hormones that results in normal development. But they have found a number of problems in baby boys, not just in animals, but, you know, things like undescended testicles, that the rate of that is increasing. And it's one of those things that people don't talk about much when that happens to their son. Or there's a disorder called hypospadias, which is where the urethra does not exit the penis actually at the tip, but it's somewhere else along there. And so these sorts of things are becoming increasing in human populations.
Yeah, just like the fish that are exposed to these chemicals are becoming kind of intersex, and there's more babies being born that are intersex. So obviously there's a connection here.
Yeah. The hormone system is something I think that people are going to, they're going to learn a lot about in the next couple of decades.
I hope so.
It will become common household conversation, I think.
So have you heard of any work that links infertility and endocrine disruption?
Yes, infertility is one of the things that's been linked to endocrine disruption, absolutely.
What are some of the studies, you know, that can point out the effects of exposure to these chemicals, some of the big ones?
Oh, my gosh. We read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies a year, a week, a month. They're coming out so fast. So you're thinking of specific disorders that are linked to endocrine disruption, the most strongly linked.
Well, I think it's like some things are immune dysfunction. Isn't there like neurotoxicity? Something with meddling with brain function. I think all these things were related.
Yes, absolutely. So some of the latest research actually that's very interesting is looking at diabetes and obesity in particular. Obesogens are becoming better understood and better recognized as a certain kind of endocrine disruptor. And so that's the metabolic system that's involved. The immune system is also involved. One of the things that's really concerning to me is the neurological or neurodevelopmental problem. So all these kids, particularly boys who have autism or ADHD, there's also potential links with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So this development of the brain is very important, as well as the, you know, the reproductive system, infertility, breast and prostate and testicular cancer, things like this that people would be more familiar with as part of the endocrine or the hormone development system.
Yeah, and men are developing breasts more than ever. I interviewed a plastic surgeon who was telling me that she was having more males come in to remove that. I forget what the technical term is for it.
Well, that's interesting. Just on a personal level, I feel like I noticed that on television, that you see more men with breasts on TV.
Yeah, it's true. I just pointed that out the other day to my husband, actually.
I thought I was just imagining it, but it makes perfect sense.
Well, let's talk about wildlife. What are we seeing when animals and plant life are exposed to some of these chemicals?
Well, that's where some of the earliest research came about. And when Dr. Colborn discovered, so to speak, endocrine disruption, she was studying the fish and animals that live in and around the Great Lakes in the United States, and was finding effects in the offspring, things like eggshell thinning and just that they weren't being born, or they weren't hatching, or they weren't developing properly. And there were even problems that they could see. And she wasn't studying them directly, but rather was gathering all the different scientific studies that had already been published on this and sort of pulling them together into this cohesive theory of endocrine disruption. But they were seeing parenting behaviors, even that the parents weren't behaving appropriately in order to ensure the survival of their offspring around the nesting and feeding and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know there was even, I think they were calling them lesbian seagulls for a while. Did you hear that story?
Yes, and that's so funny because people don't know that there's two females in the nest. It's, you know, you don't know looking at them that that's what's going on until you study it.
Wow. So what are your thoughts on eating fish since water pollution is a serious thing and these chemicals are going in there?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Some of the things that have to do with exposure, I learned because I'm a mother and I'm trying to protect my kids. There's not a whole lot of science being published on exposures. A lot of the science is on the actual health effects, but how we get exposed is really a ripe area for more research. So I tend to know more about the things that I live with, and being landlocked in Colorado, I don't have to worry about the fish issues so much. But I think that the warnings that people have now about things like mercury in fish, mercury being an endocrine disruptor, are probably going to have to develop a little bit more to include endocrine disruptors that are in the water, because they are seeing effects in fish and other mammals.
I tell people this all the time, but it's all about being conscious of the products that you're using, going to look for natural organic things. If it has chemicals in it, don't use it. This even includes all your makeup, your clothes. Also, people forget about clothes washing soap and these detergents. You're just washing
exactly
all of that into the water, and then it comes back to you and you bathe in it. I mean, this is scary stuff, and there's no need for it because we have all these natural renewable resources that we can use. So this is just garbage.
It's true. And I like to say to people that they really could probably do with less of whatever it is they're looking to purchase. So, for example, so many things are fragranced these days, and we really don't know what's in fragrances. They're not required to tell us what's in a fragrance. And they often contain phthalates, which are endocrine disruptors, that are actually designed to carry the scent into your body and make it last longer.
Oh, jeez.
So right there, you're getting endocrine disruptors, you know, a direct route right through your skin. And so many things, like you said, cleaning products and laundry products and dryer sheets and all these things are fragranced. And I think it's entirely unnecessary. And it's not that hard to avoid. You can get fragrance-free for most of these options. People just aren't choosing them if they don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I don't need my dishes to smell like mangoes or flowers in Switzerland. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Especially when that's all artificial.
Oh, and all the perfumes, all of that is toxic, but you can use natural oils. I mean, there's some great companies out there now that are making, you know, organic natural oil perfumes. So, I mean, if you want that, you can find it and you can find a clean alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. What are your thoughts on quality versus quantity? Because it seems like we've become a waste culture. We just want disposable goods. And usually that's synthetic stuff that's just cheap. It breaks apart, as opposed to using, you know, higher quality natural things that will last longer. And then we don't have to mass consume, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. I think that, you know, my recommendation is learn more and use less. And sometimes that gets difficult because not everybody can afford to buy the more expensive things, and that's where they tend to have those healthier options. But it's not always the case. There are often things that you can do without spending any money that will help you to avoid exposure to endocrine disruptors. So buying fewer purchases, so much of what we buy is plastic. So if you just cut back on all the plastic junk that you buy your children, I mean, I think anybody can afford to do that, me included. You know, that's less exposure right there. But also just teaching your kids and yourself to wash your hands more frequently, especially before you eat, to dust your house more frequently. I can definitely use that advice. There's so much in-house dust these days, and to just wet dust frequently so that you're not stirring that up and breathing it is good advice. And these are things that don't cost a lot of money.
It's interesting you brought up plastic, because the first plastics were actually made from vegetable base. So this whole petrochemical idea thing comes a little later. So let's talk about extracting natural gas. What can you tell us about this process?
Well, most of these chemicals, most of the feedstocks for these chemicals that we talked about, the flame retardants and the plastics and the pesticides and things like that, they originate with extraction of fossil fuels. So whether it's coal or oil or natural gas, they go into the ground and they pull these fuels out, and along with them come a lot of other chemicals, things like benzene and toluene, and those become the feedstocks. Those are actually, like right now when gas prices are low, natural gas, those other chemicals are very valuable to companies that are doing fossil fuel extraction. So they take everything that comes out from underground, they separate it out, they take the condensates, they refine that, and they process it into these other chemicals. And so, like you said, they're all sort of petrochemical in origin.
Yeah, it's like, I know natural gas keeps things going and we need it, and we haven't found some clean energy alternative yet that we know of. I've heard of different things that are suppressed, but we shouldn't be using petrochemicals on our bodies when we have natural renewable resources we can use. And then I also think, geez, well, if we can go into space, I think we can find a cleaner, non-toxic way to extract the natural gas we need. Don't you agree?
I do agree. And I think we need like a revolution among chemists, because the chemists are brilliant people and they're out there designing chemicals all the time. And testing for human health effects is just not part of their protocol. So we'd really like to see that change. And there's a push for green chemistry, where chemicals can be designed that they don't have biological activity, and that testing for health effects and impacts on our bodies is part of the process of developing a new chemical or a new product. And that just hasn't been part of the process so much in the past.
Yeah, I always wonder about that. What are these chemists thinking? Do they know what they're helping to create, what monster they're building? And so I'm glad to hear that there are some that are waking up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you say about the failure of regulatory agencies that are approving some of these chemicals? I mean, we've done a lot of shows talking about the corruption within, but what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a couple things going on. One, the fossil fuel industry is extremely powerful, and so they can have their way in the ways that they do that. The other is that just the history of how agencies like the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and similar agencies in other countries, the way that they test chemicals for their safety has typically been based on using a fairly high dose of a chemical, administering it to an animal, testing to see, for example, if they die, if their offspring die, if their organs are heavier or lighter, you know, like the organ weight is an outcome that's been traditionally tested. And these don't tell us anything about endocrine disruptors. So future research and legislation that drives that research really needs to be focused on testing for health effects for endpoints that are sensitive with regards to the endocrine system, for example, thyroid function or neurodevelopment and behavior, looking at those endpoints and studying the chemicals at doses that are what's relevant to what's actually going on in the environment, doses that human beings are currently being exposed to, including in mixtures, which is what you started off saying, is that we're exposed to so many different chemicals at the same time that testing them one at a time is not really an effective view of what humans are exposed to.
It's true. There's a toxic soup that happens. So
yes,
it's even a reaction of other things that they wouldn't even know to test for that people are putting on their bodies.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't even trust a lot of these regulatory agencies, even like the FDA, because there's so much money behind it and so much corruption that I want to study for myself. And at the end of the day, if it didn't come from the earth, I want to avoid it. And people say, oh, well, these chemicals do come from the earth, but they've been tweaked with so much. I'm talking about just give me 100% cotton, you know. I don't need something tweaked in a lab and made that way.
Yeah, and maybe not from so deep within the earth where it should be staying.
That's true. That's true. Well, let's talk about the evidence of the exposure to pesticides, because I know you guys have some of those studies on your website.
Yeah, we have a section on pesticides. It is one of the things we focus on. And there's been some recent news about the pesticide glyphosate, which has been a particularly tricky one to pin down where the problems are coming from. But they are now figuring out how those health effects occur and how it could be a carcinogen. And it's just a vicious cycle of applying pesticides and then using the process of genetic modification to create plants and that will resist those pesticides, but then needing to, the whole purpose is so that you can apply more pesticides, so you can, you know, it's just a vicious cycle in my mind. And there are practices that work to where you can farm without pesticides. So like you were saying, I think we just need to move towards those sorts of practices.
Yeah, organic farming. And people say, oh, but then we wouldn't have enough to go around, which is total bull. If we do it right and we take care of it right, there's plenty enough to go around. Furthermore, think of how much we waste. I mean, there's so much food that's just thrown away.
Yeah, there's people that study those global systems will tell you that there is enough. And I would also say that we could all afford to probably eat a little less and be just fine.
That's right. I agree. Yeah, there should be more incentives for organic farmers, but unfortunately, that's not what those in control want us to be eating, apparently.
No.
So what about,
unfortunately,
permethrin, is it? It's an insecticide?
Oh, permethrin.
Permethrin. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about
permethrin.
That?
Well, permethrin was a newer alternative to some older pesticides like malathione, and people thought that it was natural. There are natural forms of it. But it has its health effects as well, and so we would not recommend that. That was one of the first projects I worked on when I moved to this town, this nice little country town that is a haven for organic farming and all sorts of very healthful things. And at the same time, because of the mosquito issue, they were spraying permethrin out of the back of a truck. Every week they would drive through every alley. And
I have that too. And I get so mad. I want to run out there and choke the driver, you know, but then I'll inhale all that toxic stuff. But you can put up a sign that's a no spray zone.
That's exactly what our town was going through. And so there was a lot of divisiveness because half the people had no spray signs up and the other half of the people wanted the spray because of the mosquitoes. And I, as a mother with two very young children, I was very upset with it because I didn't know when they were going to be spraying. And even if I did, I had to then, you know, bring everybody inside and close up and then wipe everything down afterwards. And so we actually did some campaigning and got a new board of directors into our the district that governs that and turned it around, and now they're using integrated pest management and no more. We're very, very, very limited spraying.
Oh wow, that's great. Yeah, I need to get some people together where we live and just stop. I just get so mad because I didn't give them my consent and they're just spraying it in my yard and I'm forced to deal with it and I have to bring in my animals and I hate it. And what about people that have organic farms and they're just driving by and spraying it?
Exactly. It's a threat to the organic status of those farms.
And then we're probably paying it with it, our tax dollars also.
Of course.
God. So what will happen if we continue on this road? I'm sure you guys probably sit around and talk about it. It's like a bad sci-fi movie. If we continue with these mass amounts of chemicals, where could this go? I mean, are we altering our evolution even?
Well, what I see happening is there just possibly could be no end to the increases in these disorders and things that are extremely costly for governments to provide health care for and extremely heartbreaking for families who end up being caretakers for children that have problems and for older people that have problems and then even among the, you know, healthy adult age. It's a healthcare crisis of the highest proportions. And one thing Dr. Colburn used to worry a lot about was that we are affecting our intelligence to the extent that we are not going to be able to think our way out of this situation.
Exactly. That's what I've been thinking. It's a massive dumbing down. So we're literally just shooting ourselves in the foot.
Exactly.
I mean, this could alter where we go.
It very well could. It could be a more, we feel like it's a more urgent problem to address than climate change and needs just as much attention.
Now, I wanted to ask you about two other controversial areas. I know people, you know, have different views on this, but is there a fluoride connection with endocrine disruption?
I would say yes, fluoride is considered an endocrine disruptor. I have to say that Dr. Colborn studied this thoroughly, but I have not in my tenure here, and so I can't, you know, rattle off with certainty.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
The studies that show that. So, yeah, I have to be careful. I'm aiming for accuracy here.
Oh, I understand. I understand, especially in your field.
I don't think fluoride is good. I believe Dr. Colborn, and she did not want me having my kids exposed to fluoride, and I completely believe it.
Oh, I'm with you. There's a reason why a lot of European countries don't use it. The science is there.
Yeah, so. I just can't tell you what the exact effects are.
Now, what about vaccines? Did she talk about that at all?
No, we never really discussed vaccines. I think that the connection between autism and effects from vaccines on autism, for the most part, has been disproven. I am not a fan of I don't even want to say that. It's such a controversial issue. And
you don't offend me. You can tell me what you think.
Yeah. When I was approaching the vaccine issue, and this was actually before I worked here, but I went through each of the diseases that the vaccines were designed to address. And I said, you know, what's the likelihood that my child's going to get this? Is this even a current issue? What are the side effects? What's the efficacy of the vaccine? Because a lot of them wear off and they're not even providing protection to the extent that they say they are. And I asked those sorts of questions about each vaccine individually. And then I said to myself, you know, if I decide not to vaccinate my children, I have to be willing to take the responsibility that if something happens, that it's, you know, it was my choice not to vaccinate them if they get one of these things. And my kids did actually have whooping cough, and it wasn't terrible, and it went through the school, and the kids who were vaccinated were just as likely to get it as the kids who weren't. So I didn't regret that decision.
It's about taking care of their immune system too, so they can naturally fight these things off.
Exactly. Like that, I think there are way too many vaccines that are given these days, way too early in life. And especially when such a huge percentage of the people don't follow through and get all the recommended doses, then it's not going to be effective right there off the bat. So what's the point in exposing your child to these things, you know, from the day of birth? It does compromise their immune system.
Yeah, I agree. Humanity's been here for a long time, and we did just fine without, you know, polio was actually on the way out before we introduced the vaccine and brought it back. Actually, the massive death rates happened after the vaccine. I know Suzanne Humphreys has written a book about this. I've been trying to get her on to talk about it. Well, I know you're not a naturopath, but have you looked into or learned about supplements or herbs that can aid in detoxifying any of these chemicals from the body?
No, I don't actually know about things you can do to detoxify. Now, there a lot of the endocrine disruptors, particularly the plastics, are not very long-lived in your body. They find them in 95% of the people they test, but that's because we're exposed on such a daily basis. Because within a couple of days, you could actually dramatically decrease the levels in your body by avoiding things that are known to have those endocrine disruptors in them.
Oh, well,
so
that's
it's
good
the
to hear.
Ones that build up in your fat and metals and things like that that you might want to work to detox, you know, on a larger scale, but I don't really know anything about those processes.
Have you all looked into heavy metals at all? Is that an area you guys go into?
Well, lead is definitely an endocrine disruptor, mercury. I think that a lot of them would be suspected.
Yeah, there's a herb I found out about. Actually, it's a mineral called zeolite. It's a natural volcanic mineral, and it's basically created when volcanoes erupt and the molten lava and thick ash flow into the sea. And it has this unique cage-like structure, and it's one of the few negatively charged minerals in nature. So it kind of acts like a magnet, and it pulls out the positive charged ions from the body. I guess Russia used it after Chernobyl to clean up the disaster. So there's some pretty incredible things out there if we do some research.
Exactly. I think that if people are looking into these things, then we need to do the science to show that they do work and that they're not doing more harm than good.
So what are you doing to remain untainted, if you will, to avoid some of these chemicals?
In my it's an interesting question for someone like me who works in this field every day, all day, and learns. You just learn so much that you don't even want to know at one point. You know, it's overwhelming. And yet I have children, you know, and I want to protect them and myself, my family. So I approached it kind of one step at a time, because it can lead to paralysis. You get to a point where you're just like, it's pointless. Why do anything? Because I can't stop it. But you can reduce your exposures. And I think there's an incredible value in living in line with what you believe. And if you believe that these are harming you, which they could be, then you take the steps to address that. So if I started with plastic food containers, and I got rid of those and I went to glass, and then plastic drinking containers, and then I got rid of my nonstick pans. And, you know, some of those steps are easier, but I did the things that were obvious to me and that really bothered me. And I think those vary quite a bit from person to person. So you may feel like, oh, I have to stop eating the pesticide, you know, the fruits with the pesticides. And you can go and you can find lists of fruits and vegetables that are more likely to have pesticides on them, and you should really buy organic, and others that are less likely to, and they might not be so bad in the conventional form. And someone else might have a different concern. They might feel like they need a water filter. And I think if you do the things that are bothering you, it allows you to take it one step at a time, and they kind of snowball, because then you feel good that you've made that step and you can move on to the next one without being overwhelmed.
And that's good advice. I wanted to ask about Theo Colburn, the founder of TEDx, since you knew her well. What other things did she find important that we've missed in this conversation?
Well, she used to sometimes get on me if I did an interview and I didn't mention the benzene ring. I know that's less important to the general public, but she really felt like the real heart, the root of all of these chemicals, these petrochemicals, lies in that molecule, a benzene ring that comes from deep in the earth and then is used to create all of these chemicals that mimic things. I'd have to think a minute to see what else she might tell me I missed.
Yeah, I had my eye on her for a while and was sad to find that she died before I could reach out to her, since she was a wealth of information.
Yeah, it was. Well, she had a very, very long and very productive life. You know, she didn't go, but she went back to school to study this herself when she was in her late 50s. So she was sort of older when she arrived on the scene. And I think that combination of confidence and experience and newly acquired knowledge was really what spurred her on to take her message to the halls of Congress and really make some important changes.
Yeah. What are you guys doing to change things? Are you having any sort of impact politically?
We try to. We're a science-based organization. And so primarily what we do is study the science and provide that to other organizations who are running campaigns. Not political campaigns, but campaigns to talk to politicians and to get the changes that need to be made. So being kind of remote from Washington, D.C., we don't get a whole lot of opportunity to talk directly to politicians, but there's work being done on the Toxic Substances Control Act, referred to as TSCA, and there have been various attempts to revise that very old piece of legislation that governs how we deal with toxic chemicals. And it's very fractionated across different groups and across political lines. And the bill that's being proposed right now is not good. It's not going to solve the problem. And we're going to be getting more involved in the near future in really trying to bring the picture of endocrine disruption into that conversation, because endocrine disruptors aren't a separate group of chemicals from persistent PBTs or this kind of chemical or that kind of chemical. They can't be addressed sort of compartmentally. They're really the foundational root of how we're exposed to chemicals at these very low concentrations that are affecting us in so many different ways. And so we feel that legislation really has to be based on the effects that occur in the endocrine system.
I think, too, what you're doing is important, the scientific aspect, just to bring that knowledge to people, because educating people is the most important thing so that they can choose to not support some of these companies and buy some of these products, correct?
Absolutely. I think that is often a faster route to change than legislation. BPA did not get taken out of drinking bottles because of government legislation. It was because consumers demanded it. And they stopped buying them. So that's a very effective tool. I think another thing that could happen in terms of education is that people could start talking to their doctors about this. The medical community, at the level of like the societies, the organizations like the Endocrine Society, they're they're doing a lot of really good work, strong work, and working with legislators and regulators. But at the level of your family doctor, I don't think there's a lot of change yet in terms of how they deal with environmental exposures in general and recommendations that they give to people around avoiding chemicals that could be endocrine disruptors. And this is where that precautionary principle comes in most strongly, I think, in that we can't afford to wait until every piece of scientific evidence is brought to bear on the discussion. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies that show that bisphenol A disrupts the endocrine system in a variety of different ways. And so, and it's still not regulated the way it should be and not considered by regulatory bodies to be an endocrine disruptor. So this is where the people who don't want to wait for that point to come, that time which may never come, can say, well, it's to my benefit to just avoid them until we know everything about them. Instead of saying they're safe until we know everything about them, say that they should be treated with caution, they should be avoided until we know everything about them. And so bringing this up with your doctor and saying, well, you know, I'm here to see you about a thyroid condition. Is it possible this has anything to do with chemicals in my environment, something I'm exposed to, maybe endocrine disruptors? And just see where that gets you, because even if the doctor doesn't really know a whole lot about it or doesn't want to address it in that context, the more patients ask about it, the more they'll look into it, and the more we'll get some pressure from the medical community to start getting some answers.
That's true, because right now you sometimes they look at you like, oh, you're one of those quack conspiracy theorists.
Exactly.
You know?
It shouldn't be like that. And I think one of the main ways to change that is for more and more people to start asking about it. And it doesn't have to be that you have all the answers. It can just be raising the question.
Yeah, it's true.
And that can be enough.
Some of these people could be actually teaching their doctor about what some of these things are, bring them some of the evidence.
Yeah,
to get them
or at least encouraging them, because I think doctors get a lot of information from pharmaceutical companies and they don't get that much information from patients and from other people who know things.
Yeah, treat it with the pill. That's about where it ends with some doctors, unfortunately. I always go to naturopaths. I know a couple great mm-hmm. ones, and I swear by that. Well, Carol, I appreciate your time today, and please give us details about TEDx and any other details you'd like to share.
Well, I think that the information that you want on endocrine disruption, you can find on our website at TEDx.org. It's TEDx.org. And there's a lot of other good information out there now about endocrine disruption as well. And so I encourage you to learn as much as you can. And thanks for having me on your show.
I don't know about all of you listening, but the thought of humanity being unknowingly chemically manipulated mentally, physically, sexually, and emotionally is very disturbing and creepy, but it is taking place. And what is even more incredible is those who defend and deny the effects chemicals are having on our bodies. Put that together with the mind manipulation and social engineering, and it's one deadly cocktail. And we're drinking it, folks. At this ongoing rate, humanity is heading straight for the cliff of no return. If you're interested and want to learn more, I highly recommend Dr. Cleo Colburn's book published in 1996 called Our Stolen Future. Are we threatening our fertility, intelligence, and survival? I've heard people argue that chemicals are improving humans, such as men with higher estrogen levels are new and improved males because they're more docile. This is insanity, folks. And I've heard others who say, well, transhumanism is the future, so who cares about the physical body because we'll merge with machines? These same people say being human is oppressive and that they need to be liberated from it. Both the use of excessive chemicals and also excessive technology will lead to our death. We're made of flesh and blood of the earth, and we become part of the earth when we die. Nutrients strengthen our immune system, not nanobots or pharmaceuticals, and no level of virtual reality can ever compare to the feeling of nature. While an exoskeleton could be great for battle, at the current rate of dumbing down from chemicals, humans won't even know how to invent machines anymore. We're suffering from dysgenics. But underneath it all, I'd say humanity is undergoing a eugenics experiment, and those who are smart to what is happening will survive. I can't stress this to you all enough. Clean out the toxic garbage out of your house as much as possible. I realize in today's modern civilization, it's nearly impossible to be 100% free of synthetic materials. But target the areas you can easily become 100% non-toxic, such as your personal hygiene products, makeup, hair care, perfumes, colognes, household cleaners, yard products, pharmaceuticals, and of course, buy natural fiber materials whenever possible. And most of all, pay attention to your food. All these little things add up, contributing to your daily toxic burden. But you'll notice when you replace your unnatural products with natural alternatives, you'll look and feel like a new human. And by all means, never trust a government agency with your health. Radio314.com is the website where you can find more radio interviews and links to our social network. And be sure to see our latest videos by visiting redicecreations.com and clicking on TV. Have a great night.